If I can, John, I know you've been waiting for a while, in a second. I want to make a kind of point of query to kind of focus back the discussion. Because there are two kinds of things that have been mentioned that should meet in the discussion and have not met. One of them is a, for the most part, have not met. One of them is a discussion of things that have not happened. So let me just, there are various things in social history that did not happen that, say, Marxists expected, hoped for, other reformers expected, hoped for, and didn't happen. In the context of physics, I was talking about something that was hoped for, expected, didn't happen. The artificial intelligence, the evidence that computers can think creatively, independently, program themselves, and so forth, is something that was broadly expected and is not happening. John, I think that's one of your points. The failure of simulations to simulate a system that rises above a certain level of complexity is something that's not happened. Let me just add one more, which I think, Stu, you implied in some of the things you said, but a topic that hasn't come up here but should come up is the origin of life. And the thing that has not happened is not only the failure of trying to understand the origin of life through simulation past a certain point, but through experimentation, that is, attempts to make a cell auto-synthesize in a laboratory has not happened. That goes to a certain level of complexity, all the chemical experiments so far, and then stops. So on the one hand, we have a list of things that have not happened that at least people with a certain mainstream ideology in the different fields expect it to happen is not happening.
Can I have one further?
Yes.
I think in metaphysics, there may have been a view that metaphysics would continue to make progress, to change, to transform, to innovate, and that too has not
happened. Good.
And that is also centuries.
Say more about that.
There's a view that metaphysics may have led to a form of science, a form of creative endeavor that would be productive and so forth, which has not happened. Again, this seems to be a limit. So I just wanted to add a little thing. I didn't want to change the topic.
Okay, because then I want to come.
Yeah.
Where is the time?
I just want a few more sentences to explicate that thesis.
Then I'd rather not. I fear the comeback. I wanted to add it.
All right.
Okay. At the same time, there have been offered some possible limits on what was expected or on reductionist ideas and so forth. So the internal versus the external view was mentioned. And that certainly, I think, you meant it could become a possible explanation for why some of these things have not happened, i.e. we are limited to the internal view or the external view is a myth or something like that. Stu, you offered a general argument for the end of reductionism, for the limit to reductionism, that reductionism cannot anticipate a pre-adaptation, therefore there cannot be a theoretical construction of the possible life forms, ecologies, environments, economic systems, etc. And then there is the thing that we really circle around that we're going to get to shortly, which is time and the issue of really what it would mean to have a physics or a science in which really time has a central role and, so to speak, goes all the way down, and what that has to undermine. So what I would hope is that as we go on, we connect up the things that have not happened with the possible reasons why things may not happen, which have been thrown out, and maybe we turn them into positive things. So what I wanted, so I have a proposal for Jaron. You wanted to say some things.
Right, that's fine.
Okay. It seems to me we can. There's a little bit more to say about computer science algorithms and so forth. And I'm just going to throw something out if nobody else does. So I suggest we go on a little bit further, but not much more, 5 or 10 minutes. Then we close this, we have a short break, and we come back and we start to focus on time. My next comment is a kind of preparation for that, which is that one of the things that's very peculiar about the metaphor of the universe as a programmable digital computer is that a programmable digital computer is something that satisfies predictable, that has little tiny elements which satisfy predictable rules. You put an electrical impulse, the circuit closes, it opens. There's some very simple rule. And we know why they do that, because with a great deal of work and technology, we construct them to do so. Mm-hmm. There is something very weird to me, maybe to nobody else, but there's something very weird to me about the notion that when we look at nature, quote, on very, 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 very small scales, we have little things that are obeying rules.
Sorry, what's the last thing?
We have little things that are obeying rules, even though we're in this corner that, and this is what some people have been doing all summer or for years, the only way that we can approach understanding these systems is by inventing little models made of little elements that follow rules. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But there's still something to me bizarre about the notion that when you get down to it, there's little bits, nature is composed of little bits or little elements, and they go ding, ding, following rules, because the things that we know how to make that follow rules are things composed of vast numbers of molecules whose chemistry is very carefully selected so that they follow precisely the rule mm-hmm. we have in mind. And that drives, maybe that...
Yeah. Can I respond to that?
Yes.
So, let me try to reconstruct the big picture of how all these different things we talked about connect in my mind. So we have the problem that we would like to understand how the universe can be as it is, and within the universe are us and our culture and all of these weird things. And we would like to have a unified framework that includes both rocks and us, and includes as much as possible. And so if we want to explain how we came out of the same world that rocks came out of, we would like to look at something that emerges. And the only example we have of emergence is biological evolution. That's impressive. And so we try to understand it from metaphors coming back. So that's the big program here. And the thing is that...
not just for us, but for the laws of physics.
For the laws of physics, right. Yeah. So if you have a little system...
The unified framework is about not having a framework.
Say again?
The unified framework, if there's anything that is being looked for here, is about not having a framework.
Okay.
About identifying emergence. I mean, it's...
Right. So if you have a little thing that repeats precisely the same, and that if you have a baby universe that's perfectly periodic, it's hard to claim that it has time. If you had something that, you know, if you have a little baby universe running on a computer on a desk, and externally to that desk in the room, there's a clock that's turning, but the universe is just the same. It's just a little infinite loop. It's hard to claim that you've represented time in your world. I think we could agree on that. So there ought to be some changes. So the issue of how you can have pseudo, and if you just have a random number generator that's just spewing out numbers, and then far, far down that, you look at some description that looks interesting at some huge scale, that's also not interesting. So the stochastic system is interesting. The only system that really has time is something that's pseudo-periodic. So that's the way I think of it, that there has to be... So once again, I feel like I'm coming back to the notion of similarity, but it does seem to me to be the most important one. So if you have a thing that repeats, but not quite the same way, so that there's change, then out of that can emerge time. So similarity seems to be the more fundamental notion of the two, if you're going to compare similarity to time. And So,
but you're sort of saying that only our modern Western idea of time counts as time.
No, I think I just said the reverse of that.
So, but the cyclic idea that you said.
I said a perfect cycle. I don't know if I'm how culturally literate I am in these things, but I've gotten around a little bit, and the cyclic notions of culture in other cultures that I'm aware of don't involve a perfect repetition. They do involve change. They might not involve a sense of an upward ramp, in the way that we talk about it in the West, where it's ever so much more so in some direction. But they don't. But there's endless variation within the cycle. So for instance, they have that.
And would you extend that argument? So you would say that the more variation, the more time there is. That time varies qualitatively.
Yeah. In fact, I think you could even. I mean, I think you could have some sort of notion that the fundamental unit of time is the appearance of something new and creative, or something new and innovative. That innovations are the fundamental ticks of time. That would be a perfectly reasonable form of time. Okay. So what you have. So if we want to think of time emerging, we have to imagine some notion of similarity, so that you can have pseudo periodicity, and you have to, and then pre-adapt. Then there's another thing about biological evolution, which I said before, but I feel as though I didn't quite get it across in the language that works for this group, so I just want to give it one more go, and if it fails this time, I'll let it drop. But within the evolutionary process, there is there's a way in which changes to organisms, one cycle to the next, are kind of more likely than not to be pre-adaptive somehow. That there isn't. Now, I have a sort of a.
Just say the sentence again.
Okay. There's a tendency in organisms to change in ways that seem reasonably likely to be pre-adaptive. They're sort of within the family of changes, and it's as if embedded somehow in the process of change, there's some kind of a. I think that's what you're saying about the appearance of these pre-adaptations. You're not comfortable with assigning it just a purely stochastic explanation.
Correct.
Is that right? Okay, so that's what Stu is saying, and I would agree. And I think that the explanation to that, though, and this gets back to, I think, the word that created a bit of a firestorm before, which I didn't intend. I used the word representation, so I'll withdraw it, and I'll attempt to find a different one. I can just say correlation, that in the... in the autocatalytic cycle that represents life, we go through steps that are correlated together through a loose process. So that, I mean, and I think the genotype and the phenotype in more advanced organisms is the easiest way to see it, where there's a kind of linearity in changes in one versus changes in the other, so that you have the situation where you can have experiments in gradual change rather than chaotic change, so that you have well placed and meaningful experiments, so that you have incremental explorations of the space. I just want to say one more thing, Maya. I'll say something after the break about this, but I co-run with Joe Rosen a little experiment in this regard at Dartmouth every year, where we have a class where students have to attempt to design plausible changes that are adjacent possible changes to the human body, things that could be done. So it's essentially a class in which students explore potential next generation mutations to people that might be implemented by bioengineering. I don't want to claim that our students have exhausted the space of exploring the adjacent possible for the human form, but it's interesting to see what comes out. And one of the fascinating things is that the student projects are pre-adaptive, and that they inevitably somebody will come up with a use for something somebody's come up with that wasn't intended. And the interesting thing is that there's a sort of a momentum in the very form of biology that I think favors changes that will tend to be pre-adaptive, but I think that's a sort of a meta-evolutionary process. I don't think you have to go outside the system to explain that. Evolution itself evolves, you know. So, with the innovation of sex being a very easy to see example, and so evolution doesn't have a preferred level of description. Is another way to put it.
Okay.
Sorry. That's mine.
Yeah. There's a couple things. One is I think that your point about is a really very interesting one about why we think that. If we look no matter at small scales, we just have little mechanisms, you know, and I think that's something that's worth paying a lot of attention to. It seems that this really became the religion in physics, with high energy physics, but again, I mean, these are always experiments that are done in well-controlled situations, and what you're really talking about are the interactions of these very small scales with very large scales. And that's not really the same thing as talking about just what the laws are at that scale. And it may be that what we need to do is to go beyond this kind of a description. So in that sense, I agree with you, although I have no idea what that would be. And the other has to do with this notion that you were talking about there was a linear relationship between the genotype and the phenotype. Is that right? Is
that what you're signal and the noise, that there's a little bit of linearity. In other words, it's not a stick. That it's neither perfectly specified nor stochastic. That it has to be in between. There has to be a sweet spot in between for the system to work.
Yeah. Well, it seems to be very marginal. I mean, what you have is the big thing in evolution is neutral evolution, which is, and that's how you can explore this enormous space. So there was a lot of work done, I guess, by Fontana's group, right?
And
we've had some visitors here at Wilbur's Fellow doing this. And so what happens is that, in fact, you can make lots of changes, and you can explore an enormous amount of space without changing the phenotype at all. On the other hand, you can also make very big changes all of a sudden in the genotype. And because of this neutral cluster that spans an enormous part of phase space, you can make very big jumps in the genotype and not see an effect.
Well, sure. No, there's
these are very nonlinear processes.
Absolutely. No, there's enormous. No, the genotype is actually very. Yeah, it has a lot of wiggle room in it. That's clear. So there's a lot of churn that doesn't affect the phenotype much. But I don't think that's the same question, though. I think that's on a different level.
I think it's related.
Hold on. Well, you ask a question about these little things that. And why we see them or why we use them. And I think that one more analogy maybe from solid state physics might help there, which is that matter seems to have this property that it organizes itself in some ground state or something like that, and then the behavior of the system above that ground state is described by little things. And so the point is that we might be just living in that, and in such a ground state of some complicated system, and the excitations that are above that are what we call elementary particles, and the fact that we call them elementary particles just has to do with the fact that we can't see the sort of beyond that, we can't see the structure that's under that.
Good.
On the other side of your question, which was the what didn't work, right? In the same way, maybe we should include that we cannot, if we take this bucket of water again, we cannot show that this water is that it becomes ice, right? So I think there are 12 or something like that different versions of ice, and yeah. not one of them has been calculated theoretically. Before it has been observed, so this is it's sort of this jump that is the impossibility from this one point of view, which is just water molecules, to this new thing, ice, and we can't do it. It's just too complex. And then somehow I think this is behind a lot of things here. That it's just the size is just too big. We can't do it.
I'm going to close the discussion. Those are two points that I hope you'll bring back when we talk about bulk objects and convergence and so forth, because that is something that I think for tomorrow should be on the schedule. I propose that we break for 15 minutes. I don't think anything was planned from the outside, but if we can go down and get fresh, good coffee down there. And when we come back, so on that clock, I propose we come back at 4:20, and then we will talk about time and causality. So,